I'll leave you with this with Dustin Chafin.
We're stuck by the weather because we're old dudes.
Dude, that's old dude. That's straight old dude conversation.
Yeah, you can't help it.
Colin Quinn has one of my favorite jokes about that. He's like, I got in the elevator. My neighbor was in. He's like, hey, this weather's crazy, huh? The guy goes, what do you expect? It's the weather. I don't know. I expect you to, you know, adhere by the certain social code that says you'll just have a decent conversation. And that's what stops us from not taking chunks out of each other's cheeks.
Yeah, did you see his show?
I'm going to see it again tonight.
Again?
Yeah.
How was it?
Great. Awesome. I hated the crowd the first time I saw it. I thought the crowd was dumb.
Yeah.
Bunch of old O&A fans, you know?
Oh,
they were
just like,
rowdy. So they're just like, I don't know. There was a specific group that they were drunk. And I was following them to the theater, and I was like, these guys are going to suck. And they sat behind us. And then Dave Juskow, who was there? Someone else, another comic was in the back, and he's like, yeah, they were a problem.
Oh, that's how do you go to a theater and become a problem? Mm-hmm. Like, I understand it's like they're moving drinks.
And it's a brilliant show.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah. It's just like Colin just, you know, all the subjects that we'd like to tackle as comics, and so he's just so crystal clear and perfect.
Yeah, I mean,
Dude, it's just unbelievable.
Yeah, I saw his very first one-man show, the Irish thing.
Oh, Irish Wake.
Yeah,
Irish
that was Wake. Great. That was
yeah, New York Story, on the one on Netflix, is my favorite. And I think he just keeps getting better every time he does one.
Yeah, I don't know. It's like, just that vulnerability, too, to just do like a theater show is tough.
Yeah.
I mean, that one, the Irish Wake, was definitely like personal stuff.
Yeah.
But then this is like,
this is so smart.
He's going in on everything that's happening.
Just
right?
he dissects democracy and kind of, well, of course people in New York are going to have a different viewpoint than people in Nebraska. And he's
he
does a great analogy of like, you know, fucking people in Switzerland and Scotland, you know, it's the same distance and they're fucking different people.
Well, that's what I was saying to some audience members the other night. They were Trump people and I was doing Trump jokes. I go, listen, I get why you're Trump people. Like, you have a better tax bracket than me. I'm telling dick jokes in front of a fake brick wall.
Yeah.
Like, I need a compassionate government. You know what I mean? This place is not giving me dental.
I would be more inclined to be a fan of the Koch brothers if I had a tax shelter. If I needed something. If I was taking in that. If I had that windfall of an income that I was like, I gotta fucking cut some corners.
I'm not afraid to be a piece of shit. Yeah. I just need a purpose.
Yeah.
If you're broke and you're into that's where the trouble is, you know.
If you're broken and you're into Trump, you are being sold snake oil. You are being sold straight up snake oil.
Because he's not a Christian.
So yeah, he doesn't give a fuck about
He's using
poor
that whole and by the way, black
fucking and white
mentality.
People. Poor people.
Yeah, absolutely.
But I mean, dude, I don't know. Is this on the podcast?
It'll be fun.
Here's the thing about comics in 2019 is there's too many people who haven't got the funny down yet, who are jumping into shit where they shouldn't be talking about.
Oh, yeah.
I'm still working on the funny. So I don't, like, if you want to talk off mic about politics, sure. I'll give you my opinions. But unless I have a killer joke, a killer joke behind it, I'm not floating it out there.
Yeah. Well, there's that politics. There's also, even being blue, I feel people don't have the skills to do that.
No, man. No.
You know, like Big J or something. Like, he has those. Like,
he's a master at it.
He's a master.
I'll tell you this.
Amazing to watch.
Exactly. In doing a radio show with him for 4 years, doing 8 hours of radio with him for the past 4 years.
It's amazing.
I can tell you immediately that he has the ability to go on stage with his soft baby blue eyes and ask a woman if she has hair on her pussy. If I do it, I look like a goddamn criminal.
Well, you got that voice, dude.
If I go up there and I go, hey, you got a bald pussy? They're like, who the fuck is this guy? It takes delicate, and politics is the exact same.
Yeah.
You have to be like,
you have to be smart.
Dude, Nate has one of my favorite Trump jokes of all time.
Oh, of course he's
And he goes, and it's when he did it on Tonight Show, he goes, I don't know, man. I'll turn it on TV. This guy's like, hey, man, you're going to win. Do you like to win? He's like, I love to win. And it's just like, because it's not preachy. It's not like, he's wrong and I'm right. He's like, I don't know, man. I kind of see the appeal in this guy. To a guy like me, I've never voted. Yeah. Where do I vote? Can I vote at the bank? It's like one of those brilliant jokes. You know what I mean? And as opposed to someone who's like, can we talk about Trump? Like, if a comic starts something with that, I'm like, here comes some opinions and thoughts. Very little punchlines behind it.
Yeah, I just have one tiny avenue that I go, and I just say that I lost my parents this year to Trump.
I just
make fun of him.
My buddy Shane Gillis has a super funny joke about his dad catching white trash. He's like, my dad caught it at a Trump rally, because that's where you catch it. And it's such a funny joke that you're like, fuck, that's funny. Because it's not, I'm on this side, you're on that side.
And you're affected by it, because it's your family.
It's so just fucking,
you can talk about what's happening in that circle.
I think the next step for comedians is, I think comedians have to be the ones at the front that pull it back, that pull back the access to your lives. I think it's not good to see how your clowns live. You know, we're not supposed to like Insta story. There's certain guys.
Explain a little more. I'm trying to feel it.
There's certain guys that are phenomenal at it.
Okay.
A guy like Bobby Kelly. I love watching his Insta stories because Bobby.
Oh, Insta story. Okay.
You know what I mean?
That's how old I'm. I'm like, what are you talking about?
What do you mean? There's documentaries. No, I'm talking about how. I have a theory that the reality, and I'm a dumb person, so it could be wrong, but I have a theory that the reality TV boom and all that stuff kind of loosened it up for everyone to be like, yo, show your lives. Oh, everyone be a Kardashian.
The Truman Show thing. Okay.
It's all about you. Yeah. Fuck everyone else. And marketing and a lot of the way that this you know, our culture works is through marketing. And they're like, you're the fucking star. You're the star. And then what happened is certain jobs or members of society that shouldn't be as transparent are being transparent. Actors, comedians, musicians.
Well, I like the mystery of not knowing anything about George Clooney's political views or not knowing any, you know, back in the day.
Paul Newman, you didn't know what the fuck. You knew he had dressing.
Yeah. You didn't even know that. That was later.
Yeah, it was later.
It was like Clint Eastwood was the coolest guy on the planet until he started talking to Cheers and making shit up. And what are you doing?
You lose
it. Lost all that swag, dude.
You really lose it because it's a shifting paradigm, and you can change as a person. So for you to make a bold statement, it's like if Superman came out and was like, I think there needs to be a different tax bracket. And you're like, all right, Superman, what the fuck are you talking about? Don't you stop Lex Luthor? What are you... And I get that as a comedian because...
Trump is Lex Luthor.
Yeah. I mean, if he shaved his head, that'd be some badass shit. That'd be bad. Go full heel. I'm a wrestling fan. Go full heel. Go Stone Cold. Shave it. Just walk in.
He's so not Stone Cold.
Have the glass.
He's such a pussy. Dude.
It'd be so much cooler if Stone Cold was our president.
Well, you know, I'm sure The Rock probably will be at some point.
Oh, God. Then it's just...
At some point. It probably will happen.
Yeah. But it is one of those things where I think comedians should be at the forefront of being like... Nah, I'm not gonna give you my personal life.
Yeah, that's good luck with that.
I'm giving you enough.
I mean, just a female comics, you really need to, you know, reel back the titty shots and the, you know, it's like everybody's complaining about all this Me Too shit.
Yeah.
It's like every other female comedian is like in dog pose. I'm like, what are you doing?
Yeah, it's a real strange time, man, because there is good being happening. Like the transparency of your performers and shit, you do find out about a Cosby earlier than 40 years and 56 rapes later.
Ted Alexandro teaches me stuff.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like guys like that, like, okay, I'm going to do whatever Ted's doing.
Yeah. you follow wiser people. I think there's certain people, and again, with political jokes, man, I think there's great political comedians on both sides of the spectrum. Like,
sure.
I love watching a guy like Dave Smith, who's a libertarian. And
I think he needs to go back more like the Smothers Brothers. We need to get a little, like, you know what I mean?
Dude, I'm down. Fucking duos.
Like laughing, you know, make it a little sillier.
I bet
like,
silly comes back. And
silly has to come back.
And I saw
the Daily Show used to be sillier.
So silly. It wasn't a new show. Now it's a new show.
I even liked it with Craig Kilborn.
Loved it with Craig Kilborn.
Yeah, it was.
When Stewart came, he had to win me over. And then he became one of my favorite comedians of all time through The Daily Show. It's a silliness. I thought Adam Sandler's special on Netflix was
really good.
Really good because he was silly.
So good.
He's just like, I'm going to be fucking Adam Sandler, which is me going, you know? He's
singing like 1 minute songs.
Dude,
like,
if just, he went up there and he was like, Let's talk about Trump. You're like, fuck. Fuck. It's all falling apart. Oh, God damn it.
Just sing a silly song.
I'll build that wall. If he was super pro-Trump and no one saw Adam Sandler.
Probably is. Those guys with money. Come
billionaires?
On.
Dude, it's crazy.
Oh, that's hilarious. Sweetheart of a guy, too, though. That's the thing, too.
Adam Sandler?
I know, so the bigger the guys, it seems like, you know.
I saw the...
Sweeter the dudes are.
One of the most... heart-melting things I've ever seen in my life was about 6 years ago at the Cellar. I came in to do a spot, and Adam Sandler was sitting at the table with, like, Chris Rock and a couple other people. It was a packed table. It was, like, Nick Griffin, Ted, I think a couple other people, Judah. So these people were sitting at the table, and I was at the other table, the adjacent table, and Dave Attell walked in.
Yeah.
And Dave Attell walked to the bar, and Adam Sandler was like, oh, Dave Attell! And got up and got super excited and walked over and was like, hey, Dave Attell. You know, like, hi, Dave. And Dave was like, Adam, what's up? And, you know, and it was like this weird. It made me like Adam Sandler so much more that he reacted to Dave Attell like that.
Yeah.
It made me be like, I'm fucking way on board with Adam Sandler. And his albums were some of my favorite things as a kid. So to see him react to arguably the greatest comedian of all time.
Sure.
In a real way. Like a way that comedians feel about it.
Yeah.
You know.
That's all giddy.
He's our Lou Reed. Like, nice. everyone likes Bob Dylan, but yeah, he's our Lou Reed, where he's like, that's the motherfucker that's writing shit. You know, Bob Dylan's like, hey, don't forget, Me Too's a movement. And he's like, yeah, whatever. Whatever. He's got black sunglasses on? Yeah, whatever. Dogs, well, fucking that's... parking lots.
That's how, like, even, I mean, of course, now with that in Seinfeld with that comedian, when the way he was with, I mean, obviously the Cosby thing's weird now, but
yeah.
But in that movie, oh, the way Chris he was Rock with Cosby. Was,
he's lit up. But Chris just, Rock talking about him.
Yeah.
Because Jerry, it's edgy. It was so fun watching two comics talk about that. He goes, it's not the same Bill Cosby. I've watched that movie 200 times, probably.
Yeah.
At least 200 times. So to me, the biggest celebrity in that movie is Colin Quinn. Because I think he just
absolutely
he comes away looking just like Yoda.
Yeah, it's funny. I brought up Seinfeld in that Gotham spot where he gets heckled a little bit.
Oh, where he goes, where yeah. She goes, is this your first time?
Yeah. And he goes, like, I remember that crowd. Like, I brought
that's
him up.
That's crazy.
And then they cut you out, of course. You're like, fuck yeah. You. Like, would you it kill to, you?
But what's nuts for that is like...
It's half a second.
I was explaining this to my girlfriend. We were watching a Chappelle show. It was on Comedy Central, and we were like away for the weekend. It was that was the only TV we had. It was like whatever cable was on. And it was Chappelle show. And Greer Barnes was the boyfriend in when Keeping It Real Goes Wrong. When she was the lady's like, I don't like people playing on my phone, and hangs up and goes to prison. At the very end, it shows her boyfriend, and it's fucking Greer.
Hilarious.
And I told my girlfriend, I'm like, that's fucking Greer. And she's like, and I tried to explain to her, I was like, there's a time where I was a fan of comedy, just like a devout, crazy fan.
Yeah.
And it's so interesting to be friends that link me to these things that influenced me so much.
Yeah,
so you talking about that comedian, I know exactly that scene. And I remember watching that as a 17-year-old in Aurora, Colorado on my PlayStation 2 in my room on my fucking VCR TV mix being like, this is, I want to be a New York comic. This is crazy.
Every time I grab the mic at Dangerfields,
yeah.
I think of Sam Kinison.
Mm-hmm.
I think of all those young comedian specials.
Yeah.
I know that club gets a lot of flack, but every time I'm in there, I feel that history.
There's a part of me that really wants to do a self-produced one night there because of how cool of a fucking room that is.
It's a beautiful room. I love it.
And the fact that at one point you could just walk in and hear like, hey, I'll tell you something in the other room, and you'd be like, oh, fucking Roddy's on stage?
You've been in that green room?
No.
I go in the
I've gone on stage there.
Still smell the coke.
Yeah. Nate and I both auditioned there the same night.
Hilarious.
And,
denied?
Yeah. Both of us, I think, got denied. But I bombed. Fuck, I bombed. They're long sets, right? They're like 20-minute sets?
Like 30, yeah.
Yeah.
I remember. Got past there, it was like 30-minute sets.
I remember being up there
that's
and taking
cool about
and
it.
Sweating.
Yeah.
I remember sweating. That's why I remember
probably,
about,
you know, small crowd.
And there's the piano.
Yeah.
And there's like a weird spatial thing. And when you're bombing in a weird space.
It's the weirdest
space,
thing. It's a big stage with a piano, but there still feels like there's no space.
Yeah. And bright lights. And they had the little table lamps.
Dark as shit. You can't see the people.
It's
hard to do crowd work. You literally have to step off stage and look at them and go back on stage.
It's so funny to be like, as a comic, to bring you back to a bomb. And you're like, what do you see in the room? You're like, I see nothing. I don't hear anything either. I'm doubting all my life decisions. I'm hearing the ghost of the fucking Rodney Dangerfield be like, this kid ain't never gonna work here. This kid's bombing. Get him off stage. I like the southern one. I like the southern one with the slow draw. I'm telling you. I was watching all these old, I love watching old Tonight shows with Rodney.
Oh, he's phenomenal. Him and Rickles were the best.
Because Rickles was the smoothest. But when Rodney,
off the cuff.
Yeah, when Rodney got into a pocket, he just destroyed.
Yeah,
like there's like three clips.
Are so tight. Yeah,
there's just clips where he's promoting Caddyshack.
Caddyshack,
and he doesn't promote it till the very end. And it was just one of, and I had never gotten to the end of that clip because there's so many classic jokes in that one. You know, like a girl told me to come over, nobody was home. I went over, nobody was home, and he's just fucking murdering. And then at the very end, he's like, "So you got a movie coming out?" He's like, "Yeah, it's called Caddyshack." And you're like, "Oh fuck, dude, what? You're plugging the one of the biggest comedies of all time?
Wow.
It's crazy." Yeah, you know, there's a little thing called Caddyshack. Yeah, I hope it takes off.
My favorite is they had a, I guess, when they were filming Caddyshack, like he always got angry because it's like nobody laughed. When
it was the very first day of filming.
And they were like, yeah, we're filming a movie.
Yeah.
Nobody's supposed to laugh.
It's like my favorite Rodney. It's such a fucking comic mentality. That's a comedian mentality.
You are a comic.
To only know comedy and then to be in a situation like that. Yeah, they're filming the first day of Caddyshack and they filmed a scene where they were on the green.
Yeah.
And Rodney was supposed to be improvising, and no one was laughing, and they cut, and he was flop sweating. And he went to a PA. He's like, I'm telling you, kid, I'm bombing. He's like, none of these jokes are landing. And they're like, Rodney, we can't laugh because of sound. And he's like, oh, so I'm not doing that bad. And like, no. He's like, oh, fucking all right. You had to have been, that had to have been hilarious to witness. Oh, yeah. Oh, fuck. All right. Yeah, it was Ben Creed, who we both know.
Oh, yes. I love Ben.
Ben Creed is...
He's fantastic.
One of, like...
The best, like, fuck you crowd line I've ever heard in my life. Was yeah. Just like... Yeah, you guys are a good crowd. You make me want to find a steady pipe and a rope.
Love it. Love it. I started to think about suicide in more creative ways after watching Ben Creed's sets.
Steady pipe and a rope.
Yeah, he's so descriptive.
Elegant. Yeah.
It's fantastic. But he told me a story that he lived above Dangerfields in the 80s, and he was like friends with Rodney.
Oh, wow.
And he said he went downstairs to the – this was like one of those stories where I was in Tucson opening for him.
Yeah.
And we're just drunk at the bar after the show, and he's telling me these stories, and I'm like, what? He like touched hands with gods.
Yeah.
And he was, you know, he's telling me the story that he went through like the back down the stairs into the club to get like a soda or something, and Rodney was just at a booth with two women, and he was in a terry cloth robe, and he was like, hey kid, get over here and roll a joint. And I was like, that's the greatest story I've ever heard in my life.
Oh yeah,
it was one of those things where
I get,
like,
so jealous when I hear these old timers talk and stuff. Oh. It's like they had such a cooler time when they started, you know.
I think it was just that it was like brand new, and there was new, no expectations. Was everyone was like, it's like the same way they talk about like rock in the 60s.
Well, they treated it like rock. Like,
yeah,
it was like a, you know.
And it's so weird. Colin has a great, I'm gonna keep calling back to Colin Quinn. He paid me to plug this. No, I'm sorry. Go see Colin Quinn, Red State, Blue State. No, but he has a
well, he was there for all that.
Yeah, he's a great line. He has a great line in his new show about like being a comedian. And he's like, yeah, you know, I did it so I could have the generic opinion of the mainstream. He's like, that's not what comics do. We're supposed to say stuff that infuriate you and then make you laugh about it. And it's true. It's like back then, man, they were just like, fuck it. What do you want to talk about? Let's talk about everything.
Well, and I always think it's like, I feel like I would be the perfect comic for that time.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you think about
it. Yeah, like, but I think it's also like, I think that's a dangerous way of looking at it because that's like the way you start looking at high school. And you're like, if I went back to high school, I would have got so much pussy. It's like, No, you wouldn't. You would have got the same amount of pussy.
Head, no, you're like, because I'm flashy and like all
this. Dude, if I had this confident, I would have gone up to Genie and I would have been like, you and you're going out. And that's just the way it is. And then you would suck me back and I'd be like, fuck! I forgot this anxiety. This is why I started smoking weed every day. It's also the same way married men are like, if I was single now, you wouldn't do shit.
Shut up.
Yeah. You're lucky you got what you got. But I feel that way about comedy where it's like, if I went back to the 70s, the only thing I know for sure is I would have loved smoking on stage.
I would have loved
to have smoked cigarettes.
Towards the tail end, you could smoke at the New York Comedy Club. Like when I was a busboy.
When I started in Tucson.
Yeah.
In 2004, you could smoke inside.
Wow.
You could fucking smoke a cigarette on stage. I did it featuring for Troy Baxley. It was the coolest I ever felt in my life. I was also borderline blackout drunk. I was like sweating like I was like doing a Def Jam set.
But I remember it was like comics were so like into the smoking. They'd be like, oh, yeah, American Spirit is I use it for timing. Like it's seven minutes.
Remember hearing fucking people say that. I remember.
It's like, I know, like, every American Spirit is 7 minutes. So, like, if it's two, it's 15, you know, that kind of.
Is it a prop? I don't know. It helps me more time wise.
I liked just because that's what I always envisioned stand up comedy was this, like, jazzy, dirty, smoky thing. You know?
Well, watch Richard Pryor's Live and Smoking
and then
watch him bomb.
Eats about dick. Is that the one where it's like the pie sign is behind him?
Yeah, it's improv.
It's the improv, but it's not an improv sign. They have like pies for $2.
It's the New York Improv.
Oh, is that what it is?
It was like the original improv, the one over in Hell's Kitchen. The one.
The one that 50. She got.
It's the one with the brick wall. Now it's the Italian restaurant and the brick wall, and they have the plaque of everyone performing.
I know Sylvia, his wife or whatever.
Yeah, Bud Friedman's wife.
Silva, I think that was her name.
Yeah,
like she got one, and I think she got one improv in New York, and she had it open for a while. I don't know if it's the same one.
No, it's it was like a different. This is the classic one that like Larry David and all the original one over on 55th. I want to say it's pretty crazy. You walk by and they have the same brick wall.
Yeah.
And it's like the plaque with everyone who's performed there. And you're like,
it's so weird when things aren't comedy clubs anymore. Like,
it's creepy.
Nate Bargatze and I, we went to
the Boston,
but it's a stupid Chinese restaurant. And we were just like, oh, this is so weird. It was like too nice.
Dude, they do a show.
But you could still see where the fireplace was.
Really?
You could still see, you know, you could just, you know, that was the area. Yeah.
Is it raised up still?
Under there. Kinda. Yeah, there's like, you have to check it out. It's like a booth thing over there or whatever. But it's cool to go. Remember it, right?
Oh, my God, okay. Yeah. I was there when it was the Comedy Village.
Okay.
I wasn't same there when it was the Boston. But but I performed there, yeah.
Yeah, the room is the same layout. It wasn't the same.
When
same
I was layout. There, that whole front was just like fucked up storage.
Yeah.
When you walked, you know, when you sure. came up the stairs to the left and to another left, like where the front of the restaurant is on West 3rd was all like storage and weird now. So it's weird to see like it open and the windows are clear and there's tables there.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
I mean, but the Bag It In, what used to be the Bag It In.
Oh, my God, the Bag It In.
Is now, they do shows there sometimes. Zinc Bar, that's weird.
It's Zinc like a fancy, Bar. Fancy little jazz place.
Dude, and I remember getting hammered.
You almost died there like four times.
Yeah.
Just vomit on your shirt.
Terry from Derry was this Irish bartender.
I remember, yeah.
Terry from Derry. And they were all like, this like the Irish syndicate of bartenders.
Oh, yeah.
Like, I knew one guy that worked in Midtown. And we're traveling.
It
traveled.
Seemed like you were playing with the pros when you drink with Irish.
You know fuck, I mean? You do. You do. They don't. It's like running with a Kenyan.
Yeah.
You got to pace yourself. Yeah. You're fucking dead. Dead.
Ugh. Drinking with lines on the bar.
Scots and Irishmen are real, and Russians, real rough.
Yeah.
But every culture brags about their drinking. But Texas, the Irish show up. Oh, they do the work.
Yeah.
Other cultures are like, have you ever drank with a Japanese businessman? They know how to drink.
Well, it's a stereotype that is just accurate. It's not every black dude can play basketball, but every Irish guy can get down with some booze.
Listen, if you're an Irish guy and you grew up in kind of a wrong situation, I bet you could fucking go. You're blood. It's crazy. And those guys, that bar was so much fun because you would just bomb and then just, I would just bomb and then just go drink.
Dude, I was running it and drunk.
Oh, fuck.
And then bomb and drunk and fist fighting and all kinds of shit going on in that place. But it was electric. It was CBGB's, man. CBGB's a comedy.
And when I was barking there, I learned.
You hear that, kids?
You could be. Did I bark? I did it all, man. I did it all. Well, I got roped into helping a bringer show when I first moved here, and I didn't know what a bringer show was. And she was like, call these people. And I was like, what are these people doing? She's like, they're bringing friends. And I was like, okay. After the second week, I was like, yo, this shit's fucked up. I don't know if I could do this. And she's like, cool, just bark. And I was like, all right. I was an open micer. I was like, I'll earn my spots.
Sure.
And I'd bark at the Comedy Village. And Joe List was already like a working comic. And he would host on Monday nights. And the show would start at 8. And it would go till like 2 in the fucking morning. And I would bark. And at first I was barking on the corner. But then I found out you could bark just by having a stool out front. They counted that as barking. If you just sat out
so
front.
That's so lazy.
Oh, I know. And
that's
immediately found.
You know how lazy that is? That's like today. I even posted a thing. I saw a Jehovah's Witness. Like they used to knock on doors.
Yeah.
Now they just stand by a thing.
Love it. Love it. And I'll tell you this. If I was Jehovah, that's how I'd be running it. Just tell them, like, stand over there. Just fucking chill out. But I used to, the bartender liked Joe and I. So she would give us beers. Drink if you bark. And so she would give us beers. She would give us free beers and occasionally free shots of Jameson. So Joe would be hosting and he'd just be fucking running around. And I would be sitting on that stool. But remember how the stairways up, there was the apartments. So you could like walk up the stairs, go right. And then there was that like ledge, inside the stairs. So I'd put my beer just inside that ledge. And then I'd just be out there, hey, come to a comedy show. Hey, come to a comedy show. And I'd just suck down half a Budweiser and come out and be like, hey, come to a comedy show. Come to a comedy show. It was the easiest way to make barking. And then I would go up at like, the show would start at 8. I'd go up at like 12:30 for like 3 people and bomb. And then just go downstairs and drink more with those guys, with like Terry from Derry.
You know, I miss that sometimes. And I miss, like, it's funny. It's like you get further along in comedy, and then it's just like, because I lived with Nate and
Nick Novicki.
I mean,
that's a classic apartment. That's a classic Astoria comedy apartment.
We all paid like $200 a month to live there. It's all 4 comics. It was like, we could all just feature once, and we had rent made. Like, it was great.
It was great.
It was like so, like, just, you know.
But I remember,
wasted the whole time.
Yeah, because you know what you do is you look back. I think when you're in it, and this is just for anyone in life, but I think you go through life looking for the next thing as opposed to just being in the thing you're in and enjoying it. And I remember waiting tables, you know, and then
I remember meeting you were waiting tables.
Yeah, doing check spots and just getting hammered. And waking up and waiting tables, hungover as fuck, and then going doing a Soul Joel gig on a Thursday and bombing and coming back to the city and just being like shook. Like, I don't know.
Well, I remember meeting you, and it was weird. It's always weird when you meet somebody who's like you were one of these guys. You were just like, you were like that new guy at school. You showed up, and you were like, who's this fucking guy? And you're like, oh, he's kind of cool.
You know? Yeah. Like, at first, I didn't like him. Who the fuck?
But it's like one, you know, music, whatever you're talking about. Yeah. Like, it's one of, you fit in quick.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, you, because you got along with all of us. Like, we were just kind of, like, kind of worked, you know?
Yeah,
like,
dude, someone, that same lady that I helped with her fucking bringer show or whatever, that same lady said something that I always think about a lot in comedy, where she was like, New York City comedy is like a skin graph. You either take or you don't.
Yeah.
And you either see people just like show up, and then 5 years later, you're like, oh, fuck, that's like one of my best friends. And I never, I could never think of a time when you didn't live in New York, you know?
Yeah.
It's like weird that, like, we're talking about Nate.
Yeah.
He's one of the best comics working.
Yeah.
Nate is legitimately top three comics. It's Burr, Nate, and Gaffigan.
Sure.
I would probably put, and Sebastian.
Yeah.
There's a couple other guys, you know, you could fit into maybe a top five or a top 10, but Nate's top three for me at least.
Sure.
He's got a special coming out in March on Netflix. And it's just like, it's crazy to think that I was in his car going to some church gig in West Virginia. And he's like, you can't curse, buddy. You cannot curse. And I was like, yeah, dude. All right. And I had this Walmart joke that was murdering, but I said, God damn in it. And I said, God damn. And I see this lady in the audience go, oh, he said GD.
And I was like, I remember throwing a trash can at his car because we were drunk. And like, he wasn't, like, he didn't say the right thing to me when I got off stage when I bombed.
Dude, that's so funny.
And I just like, fuck you. You don't support me. All I do is support you.
Yeah.
And I just threw it and I got out. I'm walking. And I'm walking down like Northern Boulevard and then like just walking down. And he's like trying to catch up. You know, like a, like a crazy girl.
Yeah.
Like, get back in the car.
Get back in the car.
I ain't getting in the car. I just threw the trash can at his car, like this like wire trash can.
Yeah.
And then there's, and then we, and then he's like, oh, God, fuck, I get in. And then we look over and these two cops are just watching the whole thing.
Watching
and I look at it and said, well, I guess we're white.
Like, well, here we go. We can walk away from this one.
The cops are just sitting there watching the entire thing. He didn't even intervene at all.
Dude, what are these
like throwing stuff at his car.
What are these sissies complaining
about?
Exactly. Yeah, those days are like, I still live with Vecchione, so it's still
hilarious.
Like, I'm
still, you're still in it, yeah.
I'm still in the same apartment. I haven't left.
Like, you're doing all this cool stuff, but you know, sober, I got to be grounded.
I stopped drinking 6 years ago, and it's like, it's fucking still living in the same place.
Yeah. That's helped a lot.
I don't
sleep.
Yeah, I mean, I don't sleep in the windowless room anymore.
You did windowless room
for 8 years.
I did too. I did for like four.
It's crazy.
Yeah, it drives me insane. I was chain smoking into an air purifier.
Dude, that's, at least you had the air purifier. I was chain smoking without shit. I was letting the walls absorb
just smoking
that.
Right into it.
Dude, I would wake up hungover and crack, like, light up a Camel light in a windowless room.
You still smoke?
No. Miss it every day, though.
Yeah, that's the biggest one. I miss smoking. Yeah.
No one understands how fucking hard it is.
And I was like, Nate, we dipped a lot, too, so I had every
guy. Nate still, he still dips.
Like, stop doing that.
Yeah, but man, do I miss fucking ripping a butt inside. Just be like, when Vecchione first moved in with me, I was still drinking, and it was the summer of 2011, and I just got into The Wire. And this guy that bartended at the restaurant I worked at gave me all five seasons of The Wire on DVD.
Yeah.
Started ripping through it. They smoke so much in that show.
Yeah.
I'd come home hammered and be like, I'm going to watch A Wire.
Yeah.
And I'd watch A Wire and I'd
smoke with him.
I'd start smoking. And Vecchione, brand new roommate, just walks in and he's like, what's up, dude? And I'm just smoking in the living room. I'm like, sorry, man, I'm drunk and it's The Wire. And he's like, you know, Vecchione's the nicest guy in the world. He's like, all right. And then the next day he's like, can you not smoke in the house? And I was like, sorry, it's The Wire. And, you know, I think McNulty's smoking. And then I need to smoke.
Crack now.
Like, I got, I'm taking,
all into it.
You know, Bunk's taking pulls of whiskey. I got to take pulls of whiskey. Yeah, but that was like one of the things I felt really bad about living with a guy. And you're just like smoking cigarettes as he walks in.
Well, that's why I get so mad too. Sometimes I'll be, you know, I'm sober too, like 10 years. And it's like, I'll watch movies and stuff. And it's like, every time, you know, it's like anytime, like, Like, you can be an edgy character without having a drinking problem. But it's, every character that's edgy, Jessica, whatever.
Jessica Jones.
Yeah, all this stuff. It's like every character's like, oh, burned out, alcoholic. It's like you could be edgy without that.
But because I think it's easier as far as TV shows and storytelling to give it a physical example of here's why this person's fucking crazy, as opposed to just being like, we can't show you all the trauma they went through as a child. But trust me, it's there.
Yeah, I'm so happy just not to have those, crazy stories on stage. I remember just like smacking female comics' asses while I was emceeing.
Oh, Jesus.
How are you alive?
I'm so glad girls, I don't have any of those.
Like stuff like that where it's just like, hey, give it up. Rachel, pop.
Oh, my God. Oh, my God. I would be... Oh.
And then afterwards, she's like, why did you do that? I'm like,
I'm trying to... You think you're drunk and being cute?
Cute. That's the word right there, cute. You think you're cute, yeah.
And then now you're like, fuck.
Every time I see her, I'm like,
I'm so sorry.
I think I've apologized like 9 times.
Yeah, dude, there's something about being drunk on stage. That was one of the reasons I wanted to quit, was I got on stage, I think it was at the Cellar, and I was pretty drunk, and it felt like... I've described it before like this. I felt like I swam too far away from the beach.
Yeah.
Like verbally and mentally. Like I was like, it was the only time in my life I was on stage and I was like, oh no. Like, fuck. I'm hammered. These people want timing and jokes. Fuck. I was drunk. Drunk as shit.
Yeah.
Late show. It was a late show at the Cellar.
You're just like second guessing. Did I tell that joke?
I do that sober now.
I do too sometimes. Yeah.
I did 3 shows in Chicago at Zany's on the 3rd show.
You do in a row, yeah.
Halfway through, I'm like, I did this bit. I did this bit already this hour. And then I'm like, I'll fuck. And then later in the show, you're like, I didn't. And I fucking pulled back on it. I suck.
Well, I'm so happy to have you here, man. I've known you for a while now.
Yeah.
It's like, I feel like you still feel like the new guy.
That's fine. I'll take it. I'm still waiting for them to tell me to go back to waiting tables. I'm on the 4th season of a fucking TV show now. I'm waiting for them to be like, hey, you got to go back. Can you pick up lunches on Tuesdays and Thursdays?
But I mean, with a compliment. Like, it's just like this, you're still fresh.
Yeah.
You're still, I'm not a fresh guy.
Yeah, I'm not burned out on you yet. Just give me time. I'll burn you out.
So it's so cool to have you here.
Thanks for having me.
Have you heard about the 2018 study that showed half of prenatal vitamins tested had unacceptable levels of heavy metals? No? Well, now you have. I'm Kat, mother of 3 and founder of Ritual, the company making traceability the new standard in the supplement industry. I remember staring at my prenatal vitamins and finding all these things I was trying to avoid. High amounts of heavy metals, synthetic colorants, and unnecessary ingredients. So, at 4 months pregnant, I quit my job and started Ritual because I believe that all women deserve to know what they're putting in their bodies and why. I'm so proud of our prenatal vitamin. The ingredients are 100% traceable, it's third-party tested for microbes and heavy metals, and recently received the Purity Award from the Clean Label Project. You see, we trace like a mother because, let's be honest, no one cares quite like a mother. But don't just take my word for it. Trace for yourself with 25% off at ritual.com/podcast.
Showtime Billions, Conan, Comedy Central specials, all kinds of fun stuff. Netflix, Dan Soder in the building, everybody.
Yeah.
Yay.
It's fun to come and hang out in near Grand Central and feel like a businessman for a little bit.
Right next to like the Yacht Club.
Yeah, Yale Club.
Yale Club.
The Yale, the only reason I know that.
Is it a real Yale Club? Like,
The only reason I know that is because one of the characters in Billions, Paul Giamatti's character, sleeps there for a couple episodes.
Oh, really?
Because his wife kicks him out.
Wow.
So I was walking by it, and I was like, it is a real place.
Yeah.
I thought it was just on the TV show.
So that's got to be amazing, doing that show. Like, that's,
it's crazy. I was real lucky.
Because you're another guy that's a comic to me. Even if you are a great actor, it's still,
Well, that's
like, Spencer, our intern, I was like, this guy, Dan Soder from Billions? He's like, I don't know what Billions is, but you mean the comic, Dan Soder?
Yeah, cool. Good. Thank you. Such uptown problems, but really one of the only negative things about being on Billions is you have people being like, you're an actor on Billions. You're like, I'm a comic.
Yeah.
And they're like, but are you When I get called like an actor who's trying to do comedy, I'm like, I'll rip your fucking throat out.
Dues I paid.
I have bled for this.
Fucking on the streets of Manhattan.
I ate it in Connecticut at a fucking banquet room doing 30 in front of Joey Gay. Don't tell me I ain't fucking pay my goddamn dues. My passport's got stamps, motherfucker. Yeah. But that's it. That's really the only problem. And you're just
like, it's amazing because it's like, you know, I open for TJ Miller a lot.
Yeah.
And we talk and stuff about all this stuff. And, you know, he went out to LA and, you know, kind of made a good name for himself as an actor.
Yeah.
And then, you know, got in a lot of cool stuff. And he hates all of it. You know, like the idea of, like, I've talked to him about it. He's like, yeah, you know, just you'd be on the set and you're talking to this guy. He's like, I just want to do stand up. Like, he would rather be in this thing. So what he did was he went out there and made a name for himself like that. And then now he's trying to become a better comic because he got a lot of stuff, you know, quickly because of the acting. But now he's really doing the grind.
Yeah, I think it's
trying to get better. You know?
There's a weird feeling of I'm very stubborn. Mm-hmm. And sometimes they'll be like, we need you on Tuesday for Billions. And you're like, cool. Yeah. And it's like 6 a.m. report time. So you're like, it's fucking early. I got one scene. Fucking bang it out. I got an 8:45 at the Cellar and then a 9:15 at Stand Up New York. I'll be fine.
And they shoot here in New York?
Yeah.
Oh, that's
so great. Like, great, fine. And it's like 5 p.m. And they're like, well, we got two more setups. And you're like, yeah, we've been here for fucking 10 hours. It's two scenes. And they're like, yeah. And I'm like, I got an 8:45 at the Cellar. And they'll be like, I don't know if you're going to make that. And then I get fucking bitchy, dude.
How hard it was for me to get in there?
I'm like, oh, okay. So you guys need me in the background? You need me in the background? I remember season two, they're like, we might see you in the background. I was like, I got to be at the fucking comedy set. You know? And then they're like, dude, hold your tongue. You're on a major TV set right now. But it's like what takes precedent is, for me, it's such an unbelievable opportunity to be on the show and to be among these actors. But I'm a comic, man. The show will end. I'll still be on the road at a fucking comedy club in a mall.
Yeah.
Hoping that you come see me as opposed to going. As opposed to going to see whatever fucking cinema, you know.
But you know what? The second show will be full because you were on that show.
Maybe. God only knows. Maybe not. Maybe not. Dude, I might be fucking back to barking and waiting tables at a Mexican restaurant in Midtown. But I think that's the way to always live because I see people get success and then the reason I still live in Queens and the reason that I think this way is because
it is amazing. Yeah, I mean, yeah.
But it's just the way that I think I was raised to think, which is like, dude, none of this is permanent. None of this is fucking permanent.
Yeah.
And it's like the people that start to think that feel an entitlement of like, I've been in this, so I should live this way. It's like, that ain't how the fucking world goes, dude. You could chew shit and you'd just see me fucking take it. Hey, comedy show. And you're like, dude, didn't you do fucking multiple specials? Yeah. Went real bad. Yeah. Got fucked over on some taxes. Hey, comedy show.
Cocaine's out of the truck.
Huh? Started doing meth late in life. 36. Real weird time to pick up methamphetamines. Took to it, though, like a duck to water. Yeah,
I remember being a kid when that whole, like, what's his name? Can't Touch This, whatever.
MC Hammer.
MC Hammer. Like, I remember being a little kid thinking, like that gave me reality, you know, where it was just like, this guy's this millionaire. He had all this shit. And then he just... You know, what do you mean he doesn't have any money anymore?
I always think of that of like when I see these like young rappers who are just buying these fucking crazy cars and jewelry and you're like, what do you got one song.
Yeah.
There's no way I'm on the road.
Yeah.
I know how hard it is to fucking go on the road. There's no way your one song has you selling out theaters across the road. Because that's where you make your money. That's where everyone makes their money.
Yeah, absolutely.
Comics, musicians, you make your money on the road. The records don't make the money. The record get people to go see you on the road. So that's what's crazy when you see like famous comics who are like, I think I'm going to go on the road. And you're like, I fucking hate you. But it's also what makes their comedy weak is like there's certain famous comics that I'll watch their comedy and be like, that shit's juvenile.
I'm
not going to name names, but it's like you watch them and you're like, oh, you're just performing for your fans who know you from this major thing.
Yeah.
Dude, I'm so lucky to have the road that I am. I'm very lucky, man, in my career to have enough people give a shit that they show up that I can get booked back at that room. And that's the only way to look at it.
Those are the only people I think. The people that book you back.
Book you back. You just want to thank you, those people.
Everyone else? Like, I just put on there, just the people that booked me twice.
Everyone that books me twice. Everyone else? Fucking.
Go fuck yourself.
Yeah. Fall off a cliff. But there really is, man. Like, I think that would be disastrous to be a comic and all of a sudden have a theater full of people that are like, we think you're the best. And you're like, I haven't really worked that other part out.
Well, even when I see Bill Burr, like, look how I see you as a new guy. I also see him as just a regular club comic. Like, even when he's on a special, I'm like, he's got his hand on the mic stand.
Yeah.
Like, it's just, it still feels like when he was at Boston and he was just doing a set.
You know, and it's so
still
weird.
It feels like, I don't care. And then you look beyond and you see that it's like the garden.
Yeah.
And you're just like, but it's still Bill. Feels like that to me. Yeah.
It's like Bill, you know, yeah. It's like.
Well, he's Billy to me.
Yeah, Billy Burr. I mean, that's like on his headshot.
Billy Burr, yeah.
It's weird. Like, Michelle Wolf is one of my best friends, and to watch her, like, just fucking take off, and
yeah,
you're like,
so weird.
She's to me, it's like Creek in the Cave.
Yeah.
We're doing a weird show where she's doing a joke about freckles, and it's like 11:45 at night, and there's seven people in the audience. And then you're like, oh, she's just across the country doing theaters now.
She has an interesting, like, path that she took. She, you know, she really, like, got out to Twitter in a way.
I try to tell people that all the time. She used Twitter in the perfect way.
She used it as like a resume. She figured out, I mean, that's
she got the job at Seth Meyers. Yeah.
Her Twitter was so perfect.
Dude, it's so funny you say that because
nobody gets it. That's how that happened.
When Michelle and I, before we were friends, when she was just an open micer and I kind of knew her, I was at Cabin. I was at Comedy as a Second Language, Sean Patton's old show. Yeah. And I ran to Michelle. I go, hey, you're really funny on Twitter. And she was like, oh, thank you. I don't know what I'm doing. And then, next thing I know, I see her do a guest spot at the Stress Factory. And I'm like, fuck, those are turning into bits now. And now she's, listen, say what you will. Yeah. I know a lot of right-wing people don't like her because she did the Correspondence Center. But if you don't like her because of that, you're a fucking moron.
Yeah.
Watch her jokes, like her stand-up jokes. It's some of the best writing out there.
Dude. You know, and it's funny is I think she influenced guys like Vecchione because now Vecchione's Twitter stepped up.
Yeah.
And now he takes the Twitter.
Yeah. He's,
do you do that at all? Do you take
not it? At all, man. You know what it is? Is I learned that I'm not a Twitter guy. I'm better on podcasts and radio, and that's where I kind of can learn my shit. And I've been very lucky to have the Bonfire, on Comedy Central Radio with Big J, because then it's like, oh, that's where I can gain and be the funniest is by being around a guy who's like an older brother who I think's the funniest person in the world.
And you have that golden voice.
Well, that's pretty sweet. You know, you pay for vocal implants, you get what you pay for. I have the big fake tits and voice.
It's like that's people would I think people want to hear you.
Yeah, yeah. But I'm very lucky again. I'm very lucky to have like that as opposed to like having to go grind it out. But there's people that, like I said with the Insta stories, I was criticizing them. But there's certain people that it really fucking helps their whole. Watching Bert Kreischer on Insta stories. I love him. I fucking can't get enough of Bert Kreischer.
He's hilarious. He's like hilarious. Iggy Pop. He's going to be 70 with his shirt off.
Exactly. I saw Iggy Pop on his last tour, Post-Pop Depression, they had Queens of the Stone Age as
that
their
was
backing
that.
Band.
That was
shirt off, rocking it. Stage dived?
Really?
Stage dived.
Really?
He's walking with a limp. Motherfucker stage dived. Iggy Pop up in the Bronx at this beautiful fucking
he's
theater.
He's like 70 now or something?
I think he's older, dude.
Really?
And he was fucking going.
I've always wanted to see Iggy.
But it was great.
I did see Iggy once, but it was like in a Dallas Cowboy Stadium.
Okay, now you got to see him. Yeah. Like, I saw him at the
theater. Guns N' Roses.
Yeah, okay. He did Lust for Life. He did like all the classics. And then he didn't do any Stooges stuff. He did mostly just solo stuff. But then he did his Post-Pop Depression album.
Nice.
That was like Josh Homme and those guys were the backing band on that.
Are you still seeing a lot of live music?
Yeah, as much as I can.
Who was the last band you saw?
Last Friday, my girlfriend and I went and saw Car Seat Headrest up in Massachusetts. Unbelievable band. You should check them out. They're young kids, but it's rock, and it's like good rock.
Okay.
Really, really well-crafted songs.
You always know some good bands before a lot of people, which is good.
Yeah, Brian Koppelman, the creator of Billions, turned me on to Car Seat Headrest, and I got fucking into them.
Nice.
Like, really into them. And seeing them live really was great, even though it was my girlfriend and I were in a really sad argument. So it's like,
oh, that's like, the worst. You're like at something cool.
Oh,
and
yeah.
Just like in a bad mood.
In between songs, we're like, and we're like, that was good, right?
Yeah.
But they were fucking, they were great. They were really good live. Go see Car Seat Headrest. They just opened for Interpol at Madison Square Garden.
Oh, wow.
And I was going to see that, but then I found out they were playing in Massachusetts the night before by themselves at some
live music is like, I saw Willie Nelson, the Outlaw. tour thing with Sturgis.
Oh yeah, Sturgis Simpson.
Sturgis Simpson.
Sturgis Simpson, man.
He's a badass. I had no idea. Like, that guy rocks.
Rocks.
Like, he does country. He can do like hard rock. Like, his electric stuff was amazing.
Amazing. And if you want to see a great show, check out Sturgis Simpson when he has a brass section.
Really?
I saw him in Oakland at the Fox Theater with the brass section. Wow. And one of the greatest shows I've ever seen in my life. I was also on Mushrooms, but it was one of the greatest shows I've ever seen in my life.
When was that? That was a while ago.
No, it was 2016.
You hadn't shroomed in a while.
16. I do it every year.
Oh, you do? Oh, okay.
I do Mushrooms once a year.
Oh, okay.
Once or twice a year.
So you don't do drinking, but you do the
I smoke weed and do mushrooms.
Okay, whatever. Yeah.
Alcohol was my problem.
I got you.
It wasn't like I was,
yeah,
you know, it was mushrooms are a thing that I think it's nice to gain perspective once a year and just shoot up, you know, get shot to the sky. I equivalate mushrooms as like, you know, those things at carnivals where they strap you in and then they pull you down and it's like a slingshot.
With
and you shoot out. That's what mushrooms are. So that first shot, you're like, ah.
I've done it like twice. I saw Lenny Kravitz on mushrooms.
That's all right.
He was way better, by the way.
Yeah, music. I'm done. I saw Pearl Jam on mushrooms in June in Amsterdam. And I'm done doing mushrooms at concerts.
Yeah.
Got to keep it outdoors. Got to be able to change the music. Got to be able to breathe and talk. You can't just sit there. Yeah. It's the same way. Doing mushrooms and going to concerts is the same way I feel about people getting hammered and coming to comedy shows. It's like not really the best idea.
Sure.
Because if you're on mushrooms,
you're losing something.
You're going to want to babble. You're going to want to walk around. You're going to look at stuff. You don't want to concentrate on a band. Whereas you don't want to be hammered at a comedy club because you're going to be told to sit and pay attention and shut up.
Yeah. Never understood that.
Me neither.
It's like, I mean, it's our fault. You know?
Yeah.
The system, you know, I don't know why everybody just isn't charged $60 to get in.
Man, I'll tell you this.
Just make it expensive to get in, and then you won't have to worry about forcing the two drinks on.
Hearing Joe List talk about, like, opening for Louis, or Michelle Wolf talk about, you know, doing her own theater shows, or Nate doing theater shows, that's the thing they say. They're like, man, when they pay good money, and there's no drinks and there's no fucking chicken fingers,
it's a whole other level.
They listen.
Yeah,
that's what I like about the bagging up the phones.
They do that at
the Comedy Works in Denver.
Oh, that's fantastic.
Chappelle bought them the thing.
Oh, that's great.
They just paid for it, so they use it for every headliner every
week.
Yeah,
I do a lot of sober shows.
Yeah,
and, NA shows and stuff, and they're amazing.
Amazing.
Like, I mean, sometimes it's too much.
Yeah.
Because it's like, would
but
you,
they're like, we
because they're just staring at you. Like, it's just like, too, and it's like, just look at something else. I need a second, you know?
I did a sober show
too
in Pennsylvania, and it was like in a fucking basketball gym, and I was like, I'm going to bomb.
Yeah.
It was just like a spotlight at the end of a basketball court, and you got on this like
one of those.
Yeah, and then you get on, and you're like, you guys are the greatest audience I've ever fucking thought of in my life.
But that's the thing, is it's like sometimes the worst setup can be the best crowd.
Yeah, you have no idea.
You really,
you can go
in
into
the
a
best
room.
Setup, the greatest looking rooms, you can eat your dick.
The Triad on the Upper West Side is a
gorgeous room.
I've bombed there more than I like to admit. Like, I've walked in and like, look at this gorgeous. How can not
they
everyone
cannot figure that room out? I don't know
they
why.
Can't. You just go up there.
Everybody's tried.
Everyone's tried.
And everyone acts like recording an album. I just want to be like, no.
Yeah. The only person I've seen kind of pull it off is Dave Smith. Did his album there, and it
did
came,
he?
Yeah, he did
okay.
Libertas.
His album was good. I have it. Yeah,
he did Libertas, it was a great album. I watched him tape it, and I was like, man, this is working.
Well, he also has, you know, that built-in audience, too.
Yeah.
That helps.
Yeah, he brought his audience.
Yeah, that helps.
He sold it out. So, yeah.
There used to be a guy named Beecher that used to do a show there.
Okay.
And Chappelle would show up, and, like, it would be kind of cool like that, but it's been a while since something like that's happened there.
Well, let's fucking get the Triad back on its feet, everybody.
Well, we have enough Upper West Side clubs. We don't need
you're
need
right.
A third.
Oh, fuck. It's saturated.
It's bad enough. How bad is it when the
Upper East
side?
Let's find something on the Upper East. Give the comic strip.
The strip's good to me, so I
okay.
can't,
Yeah, I is H&H still there? Maybe we do a show at H&H. Really bring in the competition.
I usually do hell gigs, too. Do you have any, like, what's something that comes to mind, like, far as a younger hell gig?
Oh, dude, I mean, I've had gigs where the gigs that I think are the worst aren't necessarily, like, the least attended or the weirdest situation.
Okay.
Sometimes it's just pure mismanagement of how the show is ran.
Okay.
And I did, one of the first weekends I headlined, I did Sanford and Sons in Kansas City. And it was...
Did they play the music when you went
Dun, 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 dun. It's Stanford and Sons. I fucked up. It's Stanford and Sons, but it was... It was at this place called Legends Shopping Mall, and it was fucking Kansas. It wasn't Kansas City. It was fucking Kansas.
Yeah.
Next to a NASCAR track, and you were in this shopping center next to a Dave & Buster's, and they had a walkway, like a fucking fashion runway.
Wow.
Was down, and then like a circular thing. So you're like, but people would be sitting behind you, and you're like, do you want me out on the pod? So I just stay where the stands end, and then just have this giant rockway. By the end of the weekend, I was bombing so much that I just started having fun for myself, where I'd be like, work, work. And after I'd bomb a joke, I'd like catwalk and strut back, and they'd be like, you don't get it, you fucking hicks. But the worst show was I think it was the same guy. It was the late show on Friday. I bomb on the first show, and then I hide till everyone leaves, because comics are cowards. You just hide.
Like, I'm not walking through this.
I'm not walking. Right now. No, dude, I'm not.
The worst is like you have your bag of merch, and you're like, nah,
dude, yeah, dude.
I'm not even gonna try to sell this shit.
You just audible.
I've seen
out.
That go wrong. I've seen guys tank. And then they stand there with the merch, and nobody, and it's like, oh man, come on, dude, don't do that to yourself. Don't do it. It's like you're doing it twice.
Zany's in Nashville put this feature on me. He was featuring for. I did the late shows. This Christian comedian did the first shows.
Oh God.
And they made me use his feature, and his feature ate his dick so hard in front of my crowd, and they were great. My crowd, those shows,
sure.
Loved them. Loved them. I'm going back to Zany's Nashville later this year. Love
fantastic.
It. Yeah. Love Nashville. Love that club. This guy had a hard one.
Yeah.
And then bombed and tried selling his shirt, which was like, his shirt was like, I got the shit kicked out of me and I'm okay. He was like one of those.
Perfect.
Perfect. Just fucking bombs. Dude, this guy comes back and instead of being like, I like comics that are honest. I like if a comic eats it and they come back the next day and they're like, I really fucking ate my dick.
I do it on stage.
Yeah.
I 3 minutes in, I'm like, oh, this sucks.
But it's the people that refuse to admit it's their fault are always the comics I have no empathy for. I'm like, you're a dick. Your fault. This is your fault.
Yeah.
He comes back the next day and, you know, he's about to go on stage and he's like, I don't even know if I'm going to sell my t-shirts. Your fans don't buy merch. And I want to be like, well, they especially don't buy merch from a guy that just ate it. He was like blaming my fans for not buying merch.
Because they're cheap. They're broke. They don't have money. Soda fans don't have cash.
That's the exact tone he had. And I was like, this cocksucker.
They live with their parents. Yeah, soda fans.
How about you write a fucking punchline, you douche? Dude, it was crazy. But back to the hell gig. It was Friday in between shows. I go out to get a Coke from the bar. And right when I come out to the bar, this guy goes, there he is. And we were talking about it on this podcast. I drank very hard for very long.
Yeah.
There's people I don't remember meeting.
Sure.
This guy had some confidence. Like we were buddies. Like we fucking bunked up together. This guy had war buddy energy where I was like, hey man, I know you now. And he's like, there you are. And I get a Coke and the guy's like, man, I'm excited for this show. And I was like, fuck yeah. And jokingly, I say, just don't yell out during the punchlines, all right? And he goes, yeah, man, yeah.
Oh, no.
You go through the office to sit in the green room of Stanford and Sons. It's Stanford and Sons. It's not Sanford and Sons. I mispronounced. Yeah.
I was like, how'd they get away with that?
No. They got away with it because they called it Stanford and Sons.
Okay.
So, it was just like a hell weekend. But the... I'm in the office and the feature's on and you just hear this guy like, wow, wow, like screaming. The feature gets off stage, older black dude, and he's like, I don't know what's up with this guy at the side of the stage, man. He just keeps fucking yelling. And I was like, ah, fuck.
It's your guy.
Dude, straight up. I get on stage. I look over. It's that motherfucker from the bar. And he's like, and I was like, were you the one making noise? And I'm talking to him like, were you the one making noise? He's like, yeah. Dude, this motherfucker, this is right after I did Conan for the first time. This guy watched my Conan set and would scream out the punchlines from the jokes he knew.
Oh, wow.
I had that Russian joke.
Wow, yeah.
Where I was like, you think, the punchline was, you think this bad neighborhood.
Yeah.
I get to it.
And he does it.
Yelled out, you think this bad neighborhood. Dude, I looked at him like, what the fuck, dude? Dude, it disarmed me. I had no idea. I've never been. They don't tell you. In the comedy Bible, they don't tell you what to do when a fucking guy yells out your punchlines. But I was like, I looked at him like, what are you doing this? And he's like, yeah. Then other people start yelling. So I go after them to shut them down. And then another group starts yelling. And all these people, the owner has left. There's managers. Oh, there's no crowd control. Dude, it was 35 minutes. I'd been on stage about 15 minutes when this started.
Yeah.
It was 35 minutes of grueling, putting out fires.
Oh, my God.
But what did you say? And then you're trying to get him a laugh. You're getting him back on point. Dude, I got off stage, and this woman and her husband were in the lobby, and she was screaming at one of the guys. And she goes, "We drove here from Oklahoma to see him, and you fucked that up." And they're yelling, and she's like, "I love you on Opie and Anthony, and I came to see you, and this fucking asshole." And the guy's like, "Fuck you. He wasn't even funny." And you're like, "All right. Blah, 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 blah." Now you're hurting all, and now you're hurting a lot of people. You know, I'm like, you're trying to be a peacemaker, and he's like, "This guy sucks." And you're like, "Bah, bah, bah, hey, fuck you. Now I definitely don't like you." Dude, that was just the worst. I remember coming home after that gig, like, fuck. I called Bobby in the parking lot of a Target after that. It was Friday, so it was Saturday, and I was like walking to the shopping center to eat from the hotel, which was just in the middle of the fucking field.
Yeah.
And I called Bobby, and I'll never forget, it was hot. It was July. I'm walking through the parking lot of a Target, and Bobby's like, "What's wrong, dude?" And I'm like, "I just fucking bombed." And he's like, "You wanted to be a headliner." That's all I said. He goes, "You wanted a fucking, when you're featuring for me, it was pretty fucking nice, wasn't it? Now you're a fucking headliner, and you're bombing, and no one cares. You're good 20 minutes, can't get you to 50. And I was like, But it was such like older brother shit that you're like, "Hey, he's right. He's absolutely right." And I look back to that laughing now, like, because now I know how to handle myself.
Sure.
Now I'd be like, "Shut the fuck up. Yeah. Kick him the fuck out."
Yeah.
You know, you'd be like, "I don't want you as a fan if you're going to do that."
That's hilarious. I think it's, you know what I've noticed is like with that situation, the audience sometimes they get off on us when we, that manic, like, hey, what, you know, like, they think it's funny. And so they jump on it like a pack of hyenas when they start to see, when you give them that, because I do it sometimes, like, I'll say, like, "Hey," and I'll, like, mess with somebody, and then, like, but they'll just see that I'm bothered by it.
Yeah.
And then somebody, they think that's funny, and so they jump on it, and it's so hard sometimes. And then that is the worst when you're a substitute teacher, and you're just like,
"Quiet down!"
You just want a video at that point.
Quiet down.
You just want to play a video.
Do you guys want to watch science? Want to watch a science video. 3, 2, 1, contact.
Electric company right after.
Yeah, but it's also the thing I try to tell like comedians that are starting to headline for the first time. It's like, you will learn that you can never get angry. Because when you get angry, you can't go back to funny. If you get angry, on stage, people can't watch you be silly after they've watched you be like, "Shut the fuck up! Can you shut the fuck up?
Yeah.
You're bothering my art. My art is being..."
You
know.
The other day, I tried... You know when you think you're going to have this magic moment and then it's just, like, awful? Two nights ago, I'm on stage and I was just playing around and I said something like, "Hey, what do you want to talk about? Religion, whatever." And this guy goes, "I want to talk about Bill Hicks." And I was just like... Like, it was the weirdest, like, heckle. And I was like, "What, that he started comedy when he was 16? He was part of the Outlaws, and he started in Houston, and he was on Letterman, his sixth performance, it got bad." And then I started trying to do that. Like, I thought, like, I know all this Bill Hicks stuff.
Yeah.
It's like, flat nothing.
But by the way, you don't know. That guy might have been like, "No, this motherfucking knows this Bill Hicks." He's like, "God damn, this guy."
You're talking about Dangerous or Relentless? Which album you want to talk about?
What do you want to talk? Do you want to talk about the reason why I'm reading? Maybe because I don't become a fucking waffle waitress. You want that joke? You motherfucker. And he's all, I like him.
And then I tried to be such a cool guy. Like, I did my edgiest bit, and I was like, "There's your Bill Hicks."
Oh. Dude,
it was awful.
Dude, so bad. Trying to be, you know what's second place?
I thought it was gonna be so cool. There's your Bill Hicks.
You know what's second place to being angry on stage? Is trying to be cool on stage. Don't be cool. Don't ever be cool. You're a fucking clown. You're a clown, and remember
that. So cool. There's your Bill Hicks.
Yeah, why don't you go fuck yourself? I did that at a Hyenas in Dallas. This girl,
he's from Dallas, but
so you know that club. Yeah, they don't really monitor the crowd. And this girl was hammered. She was just talking. The worst heckles are the ones where they're close to you and they're quiet. They get right under you.
Yeah.
They just get right under your fucking chin. Sure. They get under your face mask. So no one sees them hit you. So you can't go after him. If a guy in the back of the room is like, you suck, you're like, fuck you, you suck. What's your problem? Then it's a public display of a thrashing.
Yeah.
But when they're right in their fucking front row and they're just like, this sucks. And you're just like, what the fuck? What did you say? Then you look abusive if you go after them.
Yeah.
It's like, shut the fuck up, lady. And the people in the back are like, all right, psycho. What the fuck?
Especially when it's a woman and a man, that's another thing too.
Yeah.
It's like going after hard.
You look like you're a misogynist. Yeah. You're like, shut the fuck up, this drunk bitch won't shut up.
And you're like, bitch.
Exactly. Yeah. And she wouldn't stop talking. And finally at the end of the set, it's like, I was like, ladies, are you going to shut up? What's going on? And the girl tried to like flip it on me, and she was like, we were actually just talking about how my friend wants to hook up with you. And then I tried to do the cool thing, and I go, well, after seeing how she heckles, I don't want to hook up with her. And then I just felt a wash of douche chills. Or I was like, "Who? What? Fuck. Oh, God damn it. Oh, God damn it. You dork. What? Oh, maybe I don't want to fuck you. Who the fuck are you?" And then I was just ashamed, and I just sat in the green room after the show. Oh, God damn it. Oh,
you're going to feel that. Yeah.
Before society deemed Louis C.K., before they deemed him that he can't, do comedy anymore, before the whole story broke, he was at the Cellar and he was talking about doing 4 shows at the Garden, and he said something to me that fucking, I was like, I don't know how you handled that, but he said that he went on stage at the Garden and a guy in the second row was like, you're not funny anymore, and you can't
at the Garden,
you can't address that. It's 30,000 people.
Not at the
can't
Garden.
Go on stage and go like, fuck you, I'm still funny. And everyone's like, whoa. Dude, he said that. And I was like, what did you do? He's like, I just went into my act. He's like, getting the Garden. He's like, I've done the Garden enough at that point. Yeah. I've done it 3 times. I knew it's like starting a big truck. You just got to like start it. And the point he made, I was like, oh, fuck. But all I kept thinking about was like, I am so insecure that I would have immediately gone after that guy. Then why'd you buy 7 row tickets to my fucking show? I fucking hate you. It's like, comedian has a meltdown at Madison Square Garden. Yeah,
and that's all it becomes.
That's all
it becomes. The phones pop out, and then it's like, done.
Dude, yeah. We're a bunch of fucking hyenas. Wow,
that's disheartening. Yeah. Even at the Garden, kids.
That never gets easier. Don't let them lie to you. It never gets easier.
It never gets easier. Thanks for being on the show, man.
Dude, thanks for having me. Good seeing you. Good hanging. Good catching up.
Yeah, man. It's like, I always tell people, if you ever want to hang out with people that you miss, just book them on a podcast.
That's the new hang. You want to hang out? What are you doing? You want to do my podcast? Yes. Let's just go get lunch.
It's like, podcast is easy.
Yeah, fuck it. Yeah. Let people at work enjoy our conversation. Well, dude, thanks for having me, man.
Cool. Would you like to plug anything? What's
DanSoder.com, at Dan Soder on social media. Listen to The Bonfire Monday through Thursday, 6 to 8 p.m. We got to get you on. Sirius XM 95, Comedy Central Radio, and Billions, Season 4 premiere March 17th.
So awesome.
Yeah.
And, special shout out to our new intern, Spencer Celio.
Good job, Spencer.
Say that right. And it was a good show today. And if you want to follow us at Leave You With This on Twitter and also our Facebook page. And if you're interested in doing this thing called stand-up comedy and having the experiences we have, which, getting heckled at the Garden could happen to you one day. I do comedy coaching. Check me out. I'm a comedy coaching page on Facebook. Thank you for listening to I'll Leave You With This.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.